once again this
journey of
out. For the next 5 days, trying to discover what is our real self, what is the definition of that, and how to discover or rediscover or unleash the power of the real self within us. You know, whenever I encounter a kind of a formal setup like this, I remember my school days. You know, we had a mathematics teacher, Mrs. Margaret. Her name, and once she had asked an interesting question to all of us. I remember I was in my 9th standard, and the question was very simple, but the answer was quite interesting. She asked this question, which I would like to put forth in front of all of you. In one's life, who is superior? One's mother or one's teacher? What would you say? Teacher. As good as the teacher. Okay.
She has a different role in the life.
Okay. Okay. Any other opinions? Teacher. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu. Okay. Moksha Guru. Father. Okay. So herein, one of the parents is superior according to. Anyone from this side? From the mother's side? Well. Okay. Mother is the first guru. Now, just like all of you are very seriously trying to answer this question, so were we. We are very seriously trying to answer this question. But Mrs. Margaret, our mathematics teacher, had something different to present as an answer. So, she said, the teacher is superior, always. And we thought, what do you mean, just because you are a teacher? She said, a mother can put to sleep how many of her children at a time? But a boring teacher will definitely make sure that a big classroom of this size maybe can put to sleep. So, I don't want to become that teacher in your case. Would become superior to your mothers. Hopefully, you know, we'll have some wakeful sessions. So, the journey of self-discovery. Before we begin into today's topic, I would like to make few announcements that you are all free to use your cell phones, provided you put them on silent mode, so that only you can use it. And we'll be having a question answer sessions. In case if you have certain clarifications which you want in between, so we can just briefly take it so that we don't waste others' time. But at the end, we'll be having questions and answer session. We'll be giving you enough time for that, so you can have your questions stored up for whatever, you know, points which you might see. Some of the points you might not immediately agree with because the topic is such, but we'll hopefully try to convince your intellectual side and also see that we can cater to your clarifications. So you can save your questions till the end. And I hope all of you know that there is a sumptuous dinner at the end. All of you are aware of that? Okay. So you don't have to worry about your dinner, or ladies don't have to worry about that. You'll have to go and cook maybe, or look for some food outlet. No. So we'll be having the food offered to the deities over here. Something very holy, sacred, also nutritious, hygienic, delicious, tasty. Exciting? Sounds exciting? Okay. So, the journey of self-discovery. Now, since it's a journey, we are talking about a journey. Now, if I ask you that whenever you take up a journey, what all things you consider? What all things, you know, you take in your mind and kind of pre-plan, prepare when you embark on a journey? The duration. How about destination? Beginning with that. Where you are supposed to go. Okay. So destination, and then duration of the trip. The mode of conveyance. What else? The luggage. Cost of the journey, you know, money, ticket, whatever, all of these things. Yeah, I know. So, now, when we are talking about this journey, let's take, you know, the topics which we'll be covering as a map. So, the map shows you that these are the different stops which will come, and then ultimately, the final destination of our journey, as they say, the Gantavya Sthan in Sanskrit. So, the topics, of course, you will have your entry pass and all the topics are enlisted over there, but still, just for all of you to have an idea of what this journey will comprise of, we'll just briefly go through. Today, day one, we shall be discussing on this topic, search for happiness. Tomorrow, day 2, does God really exist? Day 3, is there one God or many? Especially in India, this particular topic. Why? There are so many different, it's a myriad of so many different gods, devatas and devis and this Baba, those gurus, and so what exactly? You know? So, we'll be discussing day 3, is there one or many? Another question, important, is there life after death? So, this might, you know, sound something to titillate your faith and your intelligence. We are talking about the science of reincarnation, nothing spooky about this, but just, you know, scientifically, we'll try to understand how the science of reincarnation in India, what's it called? Punarjanam. Not like those Bollywood movies where they show, you know, the hero and the heroine now, so many janams together and so many species also. But we'll be discussing based on our Vedic scriptures, especially the Bhagavad Gita, because it's the essence of Bhagavad Gita, the title of our sessions. Day 5, another very important question. In fact, this is one of the hot topics which I have found in the 6 sessions. as you can read. Why do bad things happen to a good person like me? And many times, vice versa. Why good things are happening to such bad people? That is a more important question nowadays. You are well versed with all that. So then, that will be day 5. And day 6, the last day, practical application of Bhagavad Gita in our day-to-day life. Which means, as you walk out of this temple hall, what you are supposed to do, whatever you heard for the past 5 days, how you can practically apply, because many times when you hear about spiritual topics, it appears impractical that, okay, it's good to hear about, but does that really work? 21st century now, 2011 in my life, as a businessman, as a professional person, or as a housewife, student, whatever. Does this Bhagavad Gita really make any sense practically in my life? So, this is the ultimate destination wherein all these topics which will lead us into the practical application. So, this is how our journey will be all in store about. And, you know, all the questions which we might have in regards to a certain topic, I'll tell you, I have seen this over and over again whenever I have taken these 6-session courses. Like say for example, today's topic, the kind of questions which might pop up in your mind, many times the answer is in the next session. So somehow we have designed these 6 sessions in such a way that if you really want all the answers to all the questions from each of the sessions, you please attend all the sessions. Because they are all interconnected. It's not that they are independent, they are interconnected, interdependent on each other. So, let's begin with the first one. Day 1, today's topic, search for happiness. So, my dear friends, if I would ask you a question, that are we all, okay, let's take all of us in this particular hall, are we all searching for happiness in our life? What would you say? Definitely. We are all searching for happiness. Now, let's try to apply some logic, that if we are searching for happiness, so, if I'm searching for something, which means right now I don't have it. Like for example, if you know I'm searching for my wristwatch. So what would you decipher? I'm looking for my wristwatch, which means I do not have it right now. I'm just going into the etymological meaning of this particular statement which is in front of us. Searching for happiness. So if I am searching for something, can I deduce that right now I am not possessing it? What do you say? Happiness is not physical. So it is what? Metaphysical? No. We are just talking about searching now. It's a state of mind. But herein, I have put forth a logic, just, you know, going into the grammar, the English grammar. If I'm searching for something, forget about happiness, any damn thing. I'm searching for something.
So we are searching for more happiness.
Yes, our friend has, you know, very rightly said, we are searching for some more. We have, it's not that we do not have. It's not that all of you sitting over here are miserable. Hopefully not. Huh? You have some happiness in your life. So many things which are your favorites, which you might have done even today, just before walking into this hall. So definitely, we all have some amount of happiness, but the human nature is, ye dil mange, Ganpati Papa mor dya. Ganesh Chaturthi is coming. More, something more. Definitely. Thank you for having that positive attitude. I really appreciate that. So now, coming back to our topic, search for happiness. So herein, we have come to the terms that definitely we all have happiness, but we are looking for more. Goes on and on and on and on. You know, Mr. Rockefeller. Just like we have our Ambani, Tata Birla. So one point of time in America, the Rockefellers were, you know, the big guns over there. So Mr. Rockefeller was once interviewed and he was asked that you have practically everything at your beck and call. So, you know, what is your, you know, secret of success? Can you just summarize in one word the secret of your success? So Mr. Rockefeller, he said, more. That was it. That was his answer. The secret of my success? More. One word. Like this one word things are quite famous, you know. One time, one sage, he visited a king. You like stories? So we'll have some stories also in between, you know. Again, just, I'm making sure I'm not that teacher. So, so a sage, he visited a king. And the king, you know, when he encountered this sage, the king knew that these sages are, you know, worldly wise people. They have that kind of wisdom and they can just summarize the essence of one's life in sutras, in, you know, aphorisms. So this king asked the sage, can you, you know, summarize in just one word, what is the definition of happiness? Summarize in one word the definition of happiness. So the sage, he thought for a while. The king has asked this question. Summarize in one word the definition of happiness. So the sage said, butterfly. Now, and he left because that was what he was asked. In one word, summarize the definition of happiness. He said, butterfly, and he left. Now the king was confused. What does that mean, butterfly? So many months passed. Now this king was sitting in his royal gardens. And he happened to see a butterfly. And he immediately remembered that some months ago, that sage had given me this answer that the definition of happiness in one word, butterfly. So let me try to examine now this butterfly if I can figure out. So he goes close to that butterfly and as the nature of a butterfly, flies. So the butterfly started to fly from this flower to another flower, from this leaf to another leaf, from this shrub to another shrub. And the king became more and more desperate to know what the hell this butterfly is all about in connection with happiness. So the king was following behind. And now the ministers and the soldiers and the bodyguards of the king, they were looking at the king. Kya hua aaj hamare raja ko? What has happened? And the king, practically for hours and hours and hours, was behind this butterfly, and the butterfly kept on flying, and the king kept on chasing. The butterfly kept on flying, the king kept on chasing, pulled out his sword. You butterfly, you silly butterfly, I want to know something about you. Why don't you stop? And for many, many hours, as the king was chasing this butterfly, the king was sweating, puffing, panting, totally exasperated. And he sat down. And that was the time when he found the butterfly alighted on his shoulder. And he got the answer. Did you? Happiness is like this butterfly. Many times We keep chasing and it's just within our reach. Here, this model cell phone, I can buy, I have that enough money. But then the next model comes up. Oh, the next one. That model car, and then the next model comes. And like that. So happiness is just within our grip. It seems like that. Like that butterfly. Keeps on just alluring us, enticing us. How many times you have found yourself in this particular dilemma? That the happiness is just round the corner. I can just grab it, have it, but still you cannot have it. And then many times you don't even work hard at all for that happiness and it's just showered upon you. You all agree? So herein, we are talking about the nature of happiness. The nature of happiness which is flickering in nature. You know, flickering, something which is flickering, unsteady. It's there, but it's very much flickering in its nature. So, when we are talking about now happiness, we are talking about happiness in connection with we human beings, obviously. Now there are so many other species also, like there are the animals, the reptiles, the plants, so many other species, living species. And then we human beings, since in this room we are all human beings, so let's begin with the human species. So, what is the importance of this human form of life? Now, our Vedic scriptures, they explain that we human beings are very rare in comparison with the other species on this planet. Like, you know, I just mentioned the animals, the insects, the birds, the reptiles, the plant species, so many species. So the figure is given that they comprise of 80 lakh. And we human beings, as against the other species, we are only 4 lakh in our different varieties and categories. We are not talking about the quantity. We are talking about just the varieties. So, now, we human beings, as against the animals. Okay. So, let's begin with, what are the commonalities between we human beings and the animal species? Now, so many animal species, we sometimes come across. Discovery Channel also now makes sure that even if you are not able to reach certain animal species, they make sure that it's there right at your fingertips and you can look into the details of their lifestyles and their habitation and their attributes and so many things. So, now let's begin with comparing we human beings to the other species. And then we'll come to terms that what is our importance. So, herein we have something interesting. There is a verse from Hita Upadesh. You must have heard this scripture. Ahara, Nidra, Bhaya Maithunam cha. These four things are mentioned as you see on the screen. Ahara, Nidra, Bhaya Maithunam cha. Samanya etad pashubhi naranam. Simple Sanskrit, not very difficult. Eating, sleeping, defending and mating. So, this particular shloka, it mentions that how these four things are common in we human beings and the animals. Do you all agree? All these, you know, images also which you see that we are eating and, you know, the animals have their own way of eating. We may eat in a very sophisticated manner. We may sleep in a sophisticated manner. We may defend ourselves and we may, you know, mate in a very sophisticated manner as against the animals, which they also do, but they do in their own animalistic way, as they say. So, now, the Hitopadesh is asking a question to all of us. If these four things are common between we human beings and the animals, then what is the difference? Huh? Why are we only having this 6-session course for human beings? Huh? Consciousness. Okay, let's go one by one. Okay, consciousness. Does that mean the animals do not have consciousness? Wait a minute. We'll come to you. We have enough time. We'll come to you. Yeah. So, does this mean that animals do not have consciousness? Okay. Yeah. You have something? Sorry? Discretion. Like discrimination? Sorry? Okay. Okay. So we are supposed to have timings for our eating and sleeping. We are supposed to. But many times we don't find ourselves. Yeah, you are very much right. We have that intelligence to discriminate that, yes, this is the right time for eating, sleeping, mating, depending like that. So the power of discrimination which we have. Now, you know, some of these species like the lion. The lion, if he's full belly, even if the most succulent, you know, the best favorites of his, you, maybe we human beings, we pass by, the lion will never even look at you, not even a wink. Full belly. How many times we human beings, we find ourselves full belly, but then we, some, you know, pav bhaji and this and whatever our favorites, you know, outside some restaurant. Are thoda taste marte hain. So, yeah, when we come to discrimination, or discretion as he said, sometimes, you know, you will find that in these species, they are more adept. Like, I always remember this example. You know the sniffer dogs in the police department? The sniffer dogs? Now, these sniffer dogs has such power of discrimination that they can sniff around and they can catch a criminal who might be miles away from the crime spot. Like one time, you know, one person asked the police department that nowadays we don't see any sniffer dogs in your police department. What? No dog squads? So the police said, no, it was very dangerous for us because most of the times the dog would sniff around and come back to the police station. So now you have, you know, the dogs who have such discrimination. Now, in that police department, the police commissioner might not have that kind of, you know, discrimination power between, you know, whose body odor is what, like that. So when we look into this, only one aspect of discrimination, like this was experimented, you know, by the FCI, Food Corporation of India. So they experimented, you know, they took this bread pakoda. You know, bread, besan mein dal ke talte ho. Bread pakoda. So what they did, they took a rotten bread, absolutely rotten, full of fungus and all that. Aur usko besan mein dal ke tala ekdam hot garam sauce ke saath. आधा उसका पीस एक कुत्ते के सामने रखा, आधा इंसान के सामने. The dog came, went back, smelled and went back. Guess what happened to the human? Can I have some more? Found more tasty. So, yes, we are supposed to have our faculties of discretion and discrimination more refined than the animal species, as he very well said. You had something? What is wrong and what is right? We are supposed to have, but unfortunately, we find that the animals, you know, I gave this example, animals are many times better off when it comes to, you know, right and wrong. Many times we know what is wrong and we do that. Like Duryodhan. Duryodhan, he told to Krishna in the Mahabharata that, Krishna, I know what is dharma and I know what is adharma, but I will follow adharma. I know you are God, but I will not surrender to you. That is a person who is hell-bent to go to hell. So, yeah, we are supposed to be having that discrimination, discretion between right and wrong. Anything else? You have something? Loudly. Think. You know, in my childhood, I used to look at these donkeys. You know, have you seen donkeys just staring at the road for hours? Appears to be a very thoughtful species, you know, kind of philosopher. Just definitely, we have very refined faculty of thinking. It's not that animals do not think. They also have thinking abilities. But ours is, yes, as you said, you know, it's more refined as against the... Yeah, you have something? Dream. Dreaming. How do you know the animals don't dream? You know, they might be dreaming about having nightmares about we human beings. Okay, let's go. Yeah. We are what? Yeah. You know, like Srila Prabhupada, you know, our founder Acharya, he used to give the example that if you just throw a bag of grains on the street, you will find the birds will come peck on it and fly away. A human being, pura goni leke andar. So yeah, you know, greedy, that particular whatever you may call a kind of anartha or a misgiving within us. Yeah, that it's a negative way of how we discriminate. Okay, one last. Emotions. We have emotions. Animals also have emotions. The only thing is expression. Yeah. Like communication skills, you know. But like if you look into the dolphin species, you know, I was told that the dolphin species, they can communicate underwater without a cell phone. You know, miles. Yeah. Okay. So you have hit. Okay.
Do it when or just walk.
Okay.
The animal doesn't have.
Yeah, we have that freedom within us to choose again. You know, that the free will, the freedom, the power of discrimination and all that. Yeah. Yes. So all of you are giving your inputs that what we are actually supposed to do, you know, improve our lifestyle, you know, be less in anxiety, less in stress, be more peaceful with all our materialistic advancement, scientific advancement and technology. But hardly do we find that happening. That's what we are coming to terms over here. So when we are talking about the commonalities and the differences between the animal and the human beings. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so, yeah, all these, you know, spirituality, God, yeah. Sorry? Smile. Wow. Animals, ne? Ne? Okay. The first time I'm hearing this. Okay, I'll add on to my list. Okay. Sorry? Lusty. Oh, my God. You know, pigeons can have sex 60 times in a day. Yeah. You know, rats. Now, let's take one by one. Eating. Now, how much can we eat? You know, an elephant can eat 100 kilos. Anyone? 100 kilos in a day. Sleeping. There are these, like polar bears, there are these species, they can sleep. Hibernate, you know, 6 months. 6 months. Defending. Now, we may have our defense systems, the army, the air force, the navy and all that. But sometimes we just a bare human being without our, you know, ammunition and guns and all that systems. We can't even defend ourselves against a mosquito. A silly mosquito can kill us. So the defense mechanism in some of these species are really very high tech. We won't go into the details, but they are really high tech. Mating, you're talking about lusty and, you know, that activity. You know, rats. I was reading this article that rats, a male and a female, you know, Mr. and Mrs., in 1 year, they can reproduce themselves 15,000, just one family, in 1 year. I don't think anyone over here. So when we look into the physical aspect of eating, sleeping, defending and mating, we are very much ill-equipped as against the animals. Therefore, as you all very wonderfully are, you know, giving your opinions and inputs, that ahara nidra bhay maithunam cha samanya etat, saman roop se pashu bhi naranam. Pashu aur naro mein saman roop se ye char cheezein pai jati hain. But then, the next two lines, dharmo hite sham adhiko vishesho. Hamare andar vishesh kya hai? Dharm ko janne ki jo shakti hai, wo hamare andar vishesh roop se prakriti ne di hai. Dharmo hi tesham adhiko vishesho, dharme na hina. The last line is very important. Jab wo dharma heen ho jata hai kisi manushya ke jeevan mein, pashu bhi samana. Kya ho jata hai? Pashu bhi samana. So therefore, in essence, it is said that a human being doesn't just have intelligence, doesn't just have discrimination. He has higher intelligence. The animals also have intelligence. The animals also have discrimination. But we human beings, we have higher, refined intelligence, refined discrimination power, and can inquire into the cause of suffering and the destination of life. We have the ability to inquire. Just like you take a bird, put that bird in a cage. The bird doesn't have the ability to ask this question, why have you put me in this cage? You take a human being, put him behind bars. First question, kyun dala andar? Huh? Ability to inquire into the cause of suffering. The animals also suffer, we also suffer. But we can inquire and we can find a solution. And we can rectify the cause of the suffering situation of ours. Whereas the animals, many times, they have to just live with that and die with that. So herein, in essence, this is what the discrimination or the differences of we human beings as against the animals. But then the last line of that verse, which said, it's just the English translation of that. If one does not explore this potential, which potential? Dharma jigyasa, spirituality, knowing about God. And as you know, you are all mentioning, chanting the names of God. So, if that potential is not used, then unfortunately, one is considered simply a polished, sophisticated, two-legged animal. This is the Hitopadesh speaking. So, here is a combination. I call it, you know, animan, animal and human. So yes, looks like a human being, very sophisticated, but is simply if engaged in those activities, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. If that has become only the goal of a human being, then according to Hitopadesh, it's, yes, they do in a very sophisticated manner. We human beings, we do the four activities in a very sophisticated manner. But just because we are doing it in a sophisticated manner, doesn't make us superior to the animals. What makes us superior to the animals is something which they can absolutely not delve into. And that is the spiritual side. And many times we find that in pursuit of gratifying their eating, sleeping, mating and defending, human beings become worse than the animals. I'll tell you in this regard, from the Harvard, there is this ecologist, his name is Mr. E.O. Wilson. Now, he's not a person who has studied the Vedas or the Bhagavad Gita or attended these six session courses. So, I was reading his article, Mr. E.O. Wilson. He is passed out from Harvard and a preeminent ecologist now in America, also teaching in Harvard. So he, in his thesis, in his research work, he has come to the conclusion, looking into the ecology. So much is being spoken about the ecology. So looking into the ecology, Mr. Wilson, his conclusion is, if we remove all the human beings from the surface of this planet Earth, imagine, wipe them out, not even a single human being present on the surface of this planet Earth, his question is, what would happen? He said, Earth will benefit immensely. If there is not even a single human being on this planet, Earth will benefit immensely in its resources. You know, the degenerated rainforest will be regenerated, the global warming will be repaired. The global warming is not because of the birds flying in the air. You know about the global warming. So, like that, he's listing that how much we human beings, because of our so-called advancement, we have damaged the ecology of this planet. So, looking into the ecological side, he is coming to the conclusion that we are not required by the Earth planet. Might sound very strong. That's him saying. And then he concludes that even if, as against us, even if one species is removed, entire species is removed, say an ant species, the ants are absolutely wiped off, there will be a heavy ecological imbalance if any other species is removed from the ecology. But if we are removed, there will be no ecological imbalance. In fact, Earth will benefit immensely. So, congratulations. So, herein, when we are talking about, we are talking from, of course, I am not trying to discourage the human species, all the advancement which the human beings have done, definitely it's worth commending them for that. But, of course, the after effects of all that, we are well aware of that. So, now, another very important feature, because we are trying to search for not just happiness, the topic, bear in mind, we are trying to search for permanent happiness. We are trying to search for real, true happiness. That is what the topic is today. So, with our superior intelligence, we humans are supposed to solve the real problems of our life. If we have been given, if we have been blessed with this higher intelligence, then we are supposed to solve not just, you know, problems on a superficial level, not just problems which are not even worth defining as problems, but we are supposed to solve the real problems. Now, obviously the next question would come up, what is a real problem? How do you define a real problem? Is the corruption of India the real problem? Is the poverty real problem? What is a real problem? How would you define a real problem? Not just problem, mind. Real problem. How do you define a real problem? Yes. Not just for a human being, but for all the species. Most of the human beings are not aware of their goals. And how do you define what is a real goal?
Final destination.
Final destination. Okay. Okay, so you have taken us far above. You have something. Sorry, a problem which doesn't have answer. Yeah? Not satisfied. Dissatisfaction. Always in anxiety, you know, like that. Okay, a temporary solution wherein the problem keeps recurring again and again, and sometimes the solution itself becomes a bigger problem. We'll see how it happens. So, let's see the three criterions for a real problem. A real problem can be defined as a real problem when it is common to all. The first criterion. Now, if I ask you, how many of you sitting in this room, you had, or let's begin with this, You never had a legal problem in your life. How many of you? Beginning, I am myself. You never had a legal problem in your life. Quite. The number is quite less, which means lawyers are having good time. Okay. So which means all of you raised your hands. You never had a legal problem up until now, and yes, I'll pray. You never have. So, what is the conclusion now? For you, who never had a legal problem in your life, for you, the profession of a lawyer, whether he exists or not, doesn't matter at all. Doesn't matter. So, which means, if I ask you, is legal problem a real problem? No. Because, you know, the other criterions also, it can easily be avoided even if you have. You know, there are many ways to avoid the legal problem, especially in India. So, first criterion is that when we are talking about a problem, it has to be common for everyone. Then, the next problem, nobody wants it. Now, you see that there are certain things which some people they want, and some people they are totally averse to the same thing which the others want. As they say, one a food for someone is poison for someone else. Now let's take something very common, like marriage. Okay, there was a person, you know, he was a bachelor, he was having a discussion with his friend who was married already. So, he said, I am sick of my bachelor life, you know, eating out, doing my own laundry, cleaning, you know, my own house. I want to get married. And then he asked, his friend was already married, how about you? He said, I am divorcing for the same reasons you are getting married. Eating out, doing my own laundry. So, a person, like, you know, one time when I had shown this particular slide, what is the real problem, you know. So one lady, she gave her kind of opinion, and she said, jab nokar nahi aata hai na ghar pe, kaam karne wali bhai ya nokar nahi aata hai, so that was a real problem, you know. Yeah, so it's a fact. You know, as they say that ek Bharatiya biwi ke do problem. Naukar nahi hai parson se, shohar wahi hai barson se. Like there was one husband who was praying to God ki Bhagwan mujhe agle janam mein meri biwi ka naukar banana. To Bhagwan puchte kyon bhai? Kyunki sabse jyada prem se wo naukar se hi baat karti hai. अच्छा कल आओगे ना तो जल्दी आना. अच्छा सुनो इनके जाने के बाद आना. सो इतना प्रेम से हो, कभी मुझसे इतना प्रेम से बात नहीं की. मैं प्रार्थना है कि अगले जन्म में मैं नौकर बनूं, कम से कम प्रेम के शब्द तो मिलेंगे. सो यू नो लाइक फॉर दैट हाउसवाइफ दैट इज कंसिडर्ड टू बी. फॉर अ चाइल्ड यू आस्क द टॉय वीडियो गेम, आई हैव नॉट गॉट दैट वीडियो गेम. Even if you take in a UN summit with a child, what is the real problem of the world? You know, my video game is not with me. That is my real problem. So, nobody wants it. And finally, nobody can avoid it. We spoke about the legal problem. You know, legal problem, you go to a lawyer, you pay. You know, who is a good lawyer? A good lawyer is one who knows the law. Who is a better lawyer? One who knows the loopholes in that law. And who is the best lawyer? One who knows the judge. So you, even if you have a legal problem, very pressing legal problem, it can be avoided by so many ways and means. So that cannot be again considered a real problem. So yes, a real problem has these three criterions were in mind. So now, what are our scriptures now talking about the real problem, especially the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita speaks that these four जन्म मृत्यु जरा व्याधि बिगिनिंग विद दीज फोर देर आर अदर थ्री ऑल्सो बिगिनिंग विद दीज फोर कॉमन टू ऑल नोबडी वॉन्ट्स इट एंड हार्डली एनीबडी इज एबल टू अवॉइड इट इनफैक्ट नोबडी इज एबल टू अवॉइड दीज फोर थिंग्स सो बर्थ ओल्ड एज डिजीज एंड डेथ You must be wondering, wait a minute, I have serious objections now. Two can be avoided. What? Death? Disease?
Old age and disease.
Old age can be avoided?
Yeah, of course.
How?
If a person who is just born, and if he is dead in the old age.
I'll tell you this instance, you know, as is expressing himself. You know, there was a college program in Bombay I was conducting, and all these teenagers, and you are talking about that take up to spirituality at this age, but this is for the oldies, you know, old people. So I said, what's your age? He said, I'm 19. He said, how do you say that? Complete that statement. 19 years old. So old age doesn't mean that when, you know, your face is full of wrinkles and, you know, as Shankaracharya says, angam, galitam, palitam, mundam, dashanavihinam, jatam, tundam, briddho yati, grihitva, dandam, tadapi namunchati ashapindam. When everything is melting away, angam, galitam, you know, teeth are no more there inside, no hair also, everything is just giving away. Not that is just the old age. Yes, even if a child who is born has started his journey towards old age, that real, you know, that gross old age, but yes, growing old, it's still there. Let's begin with the birth first. The first objection which many times come up with, how can you say that birth is a real problem? Because, you know, I celebrate my birthday every year and, you know, happy, it's happy birthday. It's not just birthday. You're saying it's a problem. So many people, they come and they tell me, happy birthday. Wish you a very, very happy birthday. Now, the Vedic scriptures, they talk about, like you see this image of the embryo. Now, we were all like this in the wombs of our mother in this, you know, there is a yogic asana called Garbhasana. Not very comfortable, my dear friends. If you look into the comfort of this embryo, not very comfortable place. Now, let's try to understand from this angle. Now, this is a big room, a big huge temple hall, so many fans and lights, and we have a projector, a laptop and a screen, and everything is here. Food will be provided also, once I finish. If in case I finish. So now, if I ask you, would you mind staying in this hall without going out 24 hours? Immediately, wait a minute. Piche dekhenge, darwaja khula hai na? What if I ask you, try 1 week? 1 month, how about 9 months? No, such a spacious hall with, you know, such beautiful photos and, you know, everything is 9 months in this hall without going out. Huh? Any choices? No one, I guess no one will opt for that if given a choice. Now, let's look into the embryo. The embryo is not as spacious as this hall. There are no ACs fitted inside. And you know how the food is given? How, you know, the umbilical cord. From the umbilical cord, imagine today's dinner if we serve out like that. Sab pura pees ke yahan se andar dal rahe hain. Aaj ka dinner. Scary. For those 9 months, the embryo has to eat food like that. Crammed up. In this particular asana, sitting for months and months like that. So therefore, the Vedic scriptures explain that what is mukti? Mukti means when the soul realizes the problems which the embryo faces in the womb. And therefore it is said, punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani jathare shayanam. That if we don't realize our true self, that emancipation as they say, if we don't receive that emancipation, then again and again we have to go into the womb and suffer like that for, and when the baby is born, you know, does he come out with a 32 close of smile? Here I am, celebrate, you know. Cries. And what is it called? Labor pain? It's never called labor pleasure. So if you look into, in fact, you know, when pain is calculated in a unit called doles. And labor pain is 9.5 doles against 10. So painful. So when we look into the discomfort and the pain which the mother and the child has to undergo, herein definitely, next time when you celebrate your birthday, I don't want to spoil your birthdays, but just knowing the fact which the scriptures are telling us, that yes, janma is something which if one has to again undergo, one would not choose 9 months like this in this condition. So therefore, it is considered to be a real problem. And then of course, old age, you may have so many different cosmetic arrangements, you know, nowadays. I read one billboard in Bombay many years ago, which said, you know, there was a couple like this, you know, you see the totally, the whole the face and their, you know, whatever parts of the body were visible, totally wrinkled. And they were holding each other's hand, and a very high resolution photo, big billboard. And it said, whatever your age might be, your desire should be wrinkle free. So therefore, Shankaracharya, that verse, you know, tadapina munchati asha pindam. Even though everything is giving away of this body in old age, but asha, the desire to still enjoy and gratify the senses remains as young and fresh as it used to be. And then of course, death. When we talk about death, you know, there is this phrase, as sure as death. If you want to give surety about something, the phrase is used, that thing is as sure as death. In my childhood, one of my teachers had narrated this parable. Very instructive, very good moral lessons in this parable. There was a king, very successful king. And always, once upon a time, there was a king. The story starts like that. So, very successful king. And one day, he was, you know, in his inner chambers. After performing his kingly activities for the day, he was in his inner chambers and looking out from his balcony. He was looking into his kingdom and he was feeling so good about himself, you know, I'm so successful. And right there, he composed a poem about his kingship. See if I remember that poem still. So he composed a poem about his kingship and he started to jot it down. What a king I am, with queens of unrivaled beauty and law-abiding citizens. That was the first line. What a king I am, with men of unparalleled sincerity and soft-spoken servants. That was the second line. What a king I am, with armies of trumpeting elephants and wind-paced horses. That was the third line. But then he got stuck in composing the fourth line. Poem has a concluding fourth line. So he got stuck. He was not able to figure out what could be the appropriate concluding fourth line. Again, he went over the first three lines. What a king I am, with queens of unrivaled beauty and law-abiding citizens, men of unparalleled sincerity and soft-spoken servants, armies of trumpeting elephants and wind-paced horses. Again got stuck. Many hours passed. Now, he was not able to sleep. Fourth line. What is that fourth line? He was on his bed, tossing and turning. Just again, repeating the first three lines, not able to figure out the fourth line. At that time, a thief, it was past midnight, a thief jumped from the balcony, of course, to steal something. And the thief realized the king is awake. So the thief kind of went underneath the bed of the king just to hide. And now the thief was waiting. Waiting for what? When the king would go to sleep and I can start my job. So the thief is waiting, ducked himself underneath the bed, and he is overhearing, you know. The king is going on with his poem. What a king I am, with queens of unrivaled beauty and law-abiding citizens. It was going on and on and on. And the thief, he heard it once, twice, thrice, 1 hour passed. And, you know, it was becoming intolerable. Come on, go to sleep, man. Tomorrow you can compose. And from underneath the bed, he could see, you know, the royal robes of the king, the crown, the jewels and everything. And becoming more and more restless. My God, today is the perfection of my thievery I'm going to achieve. This guy is not sleeping at all. And the king, you know, it was so many hours now, just about sunrise. But the king was going on, what the fourth line? What could be the fourth line? Now the thief decided, I cannot stand this anymore. Next time this king begins that silly poem, bas ho gaya, I'll kill myself. And as soon as he thought like that, the king started. What a king I am, with queens of unrivaled beauty and law-abiding citizens. What a king I am, with men of unparalleled sincerity and soft-spoken servants. What a king I am, with armies of trumpeting elephants and wind-paced horses. Again he got stuck. Now the thief spoke the fourth line from under the bed. And he said, and all that I have will turn to nothing when my eye closes. Immediately the king, he ejected himself from that bed. He jumped. Wow! Who spoke that? That was a perfect line. But he was not able to see from where the sound came. And the thief realized, oh my God, what blunder I did. And the king spotted him, pulled him out. Did you speak that fourth line? That was a perfect line. Yes! You know, I was so much in anxiety. That was a perfect line. And the thief realized, he's appreciating. So the thief also, you know, I spoke the fourth line. Oh, what is the purport of that fourth line? What is exactly you meant? Now the thief, till this point of time, this story was quite hilarious. But now the thief became philosophical. And the thief said, yes, my dear king, you were so elated and glorifying your kingship. What a king you are, with queens of unrivaled beauty, this and that. But what is the conclusion of your kingship? The fourth line. Well, the thief, when he uttered the fourth line, what he meant was, tonight when you go to sleep, when your eye closes, I'm going to steal all of this. But the thief, he gave a deeper meaning. He said, this is the conclusion of your kingship, that all of this which you have amassed, your queens having unrivaled beauties, your law-abiding citizens, your soft-spoken servants, and, you know, your ministers, your armies, your elephants, your horses, your chariots, your treasury, everything will turn to nothing when you die and your eye closes that time. How much time will it take for all of that to turn to nothing? The time the eyelids take to close at the time of death. So many years slogging hard to amass all of this, and just the snap of a finger, when the eye closes, the time of death, everything turns to nothing. That is death. So, the moral which our teacher taught, that yes, you should understand what is that wealth which you can acquire in this life, which you can carry on take along with yourself, even in your future lives. And that is what we are discussing, the wealth of the spiritual wisdom. So, when we are talking about these four things in the Bhagavad Gita, as Krishna explains, Janma, Mrityu, Jara means old age, and Vyadhi means disease. How you break this word disease? When your ease is taken away from you. Dis-ease. So, now, our scriptures explain not just these four, but there are these three as well. Misery is caused by one's own body and mind. Misery is caused by natural disturbances, you know, like tsunamis, earthquakes, floods, you know, all this. And misery is caused by other living entities. So misery is caused by one's own body and mind. Just like all of you are sitting for almost an hour now, your body, some of you are changing your positions here and there. The body is giving you some discomfort. Always the body is. In fact, it is said that the body has got the potential to give us more pain as against pleasure. Did you know that? Now, let's take our body. Now, there are only few senses in our body which actually gives us some pleasure. You know, we have our eyes, you see something beautiful, the eyes get gratified. The tongue, the nose, you know. But not, how many times, you know, like you are sitting Sunday morning, you know, you are sitting and you are looking at your toe, the big toe, and you are really feeling so happy. My big toe is giving me so much happiness today. How many times you felt happiness looking at your big toe? How many times even you think about your big toe every day? You know, have you any time read any those romantic poems? You know, they glorify each other's beauty. Honey, your big toe. You know, and the nail on that big toe is like the full moon. And the dirt in the nail is like the pockmarks on the moon. So, you know, they might glorify, you know, the hair, the eyes and all that stuff. But you know, how many times we really get, you know, ecstatic looking at our big toe. Now, what is the potentiality of this big toe to give us pain? God forbid if someone's big toe, you know, bumps into a stone, you know, nail comes out and it's infection, you know, all the blood coming out. Then, the whole day you are just big toe, paining. It's paining. Whether you are standing, sitting, whatever you are doing, paining, paining. So what is the, that's what I was trying to come to. The potentiality of our body to give us pain is far more greater. The body gives us pleasure as well, but the potentiality of this body to give us pain is far more greater than the potentiality of this body to give us pleasure. So that is called in our scriptures, adhyatmika. Not the adhyatmic spiritual thing, but adhyatmika, which means our body and mind. Now, we won't go into the mind, how much pain the mind can give us. But you all know. Natural disturbances. Again, that's something not to be so much elaborated upon. Other living entities. That's called adhibhautika. Natural calamity is called adhidaivika, and adhibhautika is misery is caused by other living entities. Even you can see a mosquito can make our life miserable. At night, thakke aaye, ek machhar, raat bhar ghum raha hai, pura raat bigad deta ek machhar. So beginning something so silly like a mosquito to meri saas. Why all these serials are becoming so popular? Saas bhi kabhi, kya? Bahu thi, damad bhi kabhi sasur tha. Aisa bhi hai kya? Nahin? Damad bhi kabhi sasur tha. Asur tha, asur. Chhas bhi kabhi dahi thi. When I was going to Thailand once, and on the plane, you know, there was this Saas Bahu serial shown to everyone, you know. Without your choice, you have to watch it. Big screen, everyone. So there was this, this. It was shown, it was kind of an advertisement. So one lady in a house is watching this Saas Bahu kind of stuff. So in her house she is watching on TV that. And that was shown on TV. So she's crying like anything. So many tissue papers are here and there, you know. Mir mere ko chhod ke chala gaya, chhod ke chala gaya. And she's crying. So I was wondering. And then, you know, the, she's talking about her husband as she's watching the TV. And ye to kabhi jata hi nahi chhod. That is the time when the husband walks in. Honey, I'm early home today. So, Arti utaru. And then the son walks in. And then, Mommy, I want to watch Cartoon Network. Give me the remote. So the mummy is saying, Ayana, dekho inko. So the child is saying, ye bore ho gaya roz dekh dekh. So you know, sometimes other living entities might be just living in our own one roof, under one roof, same house. You know, the saas, bahu, bahu, saas, you know, husband, wife, or you know, brothers and the same siblings, parents and children like that. So here and there is called Adi Bhautika. So again, the four which we discussed, Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi, and this Adi Atmika, Adi Daivika, and Adi Bhautika, Tap. So now, when we have discussed about the real problems and the three criterions about the real problems, the question is material advancement the solution to the real problems of life? What has science done? Science has done so much and it's doing so much. So the question is, has science solved the real problems of our life? What would you say?
No.
Why? No. Why no?
Science cannot stop us from getting old.
Getting old. Okay, even if you apply, die, still you are going to die. You know, hide the old age with your, you know, hair dye and all that. Yeah, so over here, what do we have? Modern technological advancement only gives temporary relief. There is some relief. It's not that there is no relief. The science has given. You know, if you are not able to see because of old age, then, you know, you have glasses. Science has given glasses, you can see. If that doesn't look nice, contacts, you know, inside. If there are wrinkles, then facelift, you know. If you cannot hear, then you can stick something inside. If that doesn't look good, put it behind. All the cosmetic arrangements are given, but it's just, as they say, a cosmetic arrangement. It's not a permanent solution. I'll give you an example. That how we were talking about this, that sometimes the solution given has bigger problems than the original problem. Now, initially, the transportation was, you know, like horse cart or bullock cart, you know, that was the means of transportation. And then we decided that there were two problems which we human beings were facing through that means of transportation. What are the two problems? The first problem was slow transportation. That was the first problem. Horse cart, bullock cart, very slow transportation. I'm talking how the automobiles were introduced by science. The second problem was these horses, they would pass a lot of stool on the road. So the road would be filled with all this horse dung and the bull, you know, the bull dung and all that. So that was another problem. So the automobiles were introduced to solve these two problems. So now we have fast transportation. The transportation is very fast, but then breakneck speed, as they say. What about the accidents? How many people die every day in road accidents? Just recently, there was a family I knew coming from Pune, you know, just, you know, brushing through a big, huge kind of a bus, and two members. One member died and the others were critical in ICU. On the spot. Now imagine if you were on a bullock cart, head-on collision. Two bullock carts, head-on collision. So herein the transportation is very fast, definitely, no doubt about that. But even the death is very fast. And then you have clean roads. What about the air? Which was better? At least, you know, the horse dung and the, you know, cow dung and others would be used as a manure. So now, the environment is polluted with all of that carbon monoxide. And then your lungs in Bombay, one good thing about Bombay is that you don't have to buy cigarettes. Because just in that polluted city, you're as if smoking two packs of cigarette every day. So all of that pollution from all these automobiles. And then very fast you go to your doctor showing all that in your lungs. Fast transportation. So when we are talking about, yes, they tried to solve these two problems. But my point is that it resulted in something very serious. The solution itself resulted in some more serious problems. So therefore, let's explore it more. Yes, the progress of mankind, you can very well have the graph how, you know, from the caveman and now we have the man who is so high-tech advanced, everything is so advanced. But many times we see how technology has changed us. So we have earlier the TVs were like that, but now we have people who are watching the TVs of that size. You know, the TVs are very slim, sleek, but sorry about the, they call couch potatoes. You know, have you heard of this term, couch potatoes? So technology has definitely changed us, but sometimes unfortunately in this way. Speed, as they say, sometimes without direction. So we have all these wonderful, you know, things which result in sometimes, what is this? You know, the Twin Towers. And these people, they used all the technology, the terrorists. Nowadays, they are using high-tech systems to destroy the human civilization, to create havoc, chaos. What they are doing? Using the high-tech system. So therefore, Martin Luther, he said, very well he said once, he said, we are living in an age wherein we have guided missiles, but in the hands of misguided people. The missiles are guided, but who is holding it? All misguided brains, misguided people. So therefore, many times we find the end result into this. You know, the Titanic. A ship that even God could not sink. That was the claim which they had done. A ship which even God could not sink. And then of course they will come out with a very romantic movie and people will go, wow, unsinkable love. But then when we look into the technological aspect, yes, science claimed and it's still claiming that we'll make you deathless. Take this magic pill and you'll never grow old, you'll never die and all that. But still we find it's taking place like anything, the birth, old age, disease and death. So the question is, in our pursuit for searching happiness, are we really advancing in the right direction? If you look into the graph, what do we find? Open the newspaper. The news is filled with all of this. Rape, suicide, murder, violence, divorce, mental stress, unemployment, drug addiction. Now look into the animal species. Now we began with the difference, we humans and the animals. Look into the animal species. How many times you read that animals, you know, dogs committing suicide. नहीं मेरे को खाना अच्छा नहीं मिला, कूद गया बालकनी से. ड्रग एडिक्शन एंड यू नो ऑल दिस थिंग्स हैपनिंग. हाउ मेनी टाइम्स यू रीड अबाउट द एनिमल्स, यू नो, लाइक इवन इफ यू फाइंड, यू नो, ये गली के कुत्ते दूसरे गली के कुत्ते के साथ इट्स लाइक अ ह्यूज गैंग वॉर गोइंग ऑन, बट नोबडी विल बॉम्ब ईच अदर, यू नो, देयर विल बी अ ब्लडी फाइट. बट हाउ मेनी टाइम्स वी फाइंड ह्यूमन बीइंग्स, देयरफॉर वन स्पेशलिटी अबाउट वी ह्यूमन बीइंग्स, इट इज सेड इन अ सरकास्टिक मैनर दैट वी ह्यूमन बीइंग्स वी आर द ओनली स्पीशीज हु आर सिस्टमैटिकली डिस्ट्रॉइंग अवर ओन स्पीशीज. हम बहुत विशेषता हमारी, हम अपने आप को, हमारी स्पीशीज को बहुत सिस्टमैटिकली इन अ वेरी साइंटिफिक वे, हाईटेक वे, वी आर डिस्ट्रॉइंग अवर ओन स्पीशीज. सो देयरफॉर दैट इज नॉट द रियल एडवांसमेंट, माय डियर फ्रेंड्स. सिंपली हैविंग अ हाईटेक सोफिस्टिकेटेड लाइफ विथ ऑल ऑफ दिस हैपनिंग इन द ह्यूमन ग्राफ डजंट मेक अस बेटर दैन द अदर स्पीशीज. We have to really rethink about what is real advancement. Now, this was something which I came across, many of you might also, paradoxes. This is, you know, I was told that a 14-year-old child composed the paradoxes of our human life. And how it's so very true now when we look into the human civilization. So you'll find paradoxes over here. So we have taller buildings, you know, as they say, scraping the sky, skyscrapers. Taller buildings, shorter tempers. And it's good because when people have shorter tempers, they want to commit suicide, so they need taller buildings. So the buildings are becoming taller and taller and taller, but what about the tempers? Then, bigger houses, but smaller families. What they call nuclear, then subatomic, or bhi kam hote ja rahe. So yeah, the houses are more bigger and fancier, but smaller families. More conveniences, but less time. You know, this was some years ago. I was in Chicago, and over there I found there was a mansion which was like, you know, it was so palatial, that mansion. And I was staying over there for a day, and I found practically all the different kinds of conveniences were there. The home theater, you know, the AC and this and that. And you know who was the whole day enjoying all of that? The dog in the house. The dog in the house was enjoying all the luxury of the house, and the master was outside slogging like a dog just to maintain all this. So yes, we may have our conveniences, but how much time nowadays? So people have all the time-saving devices and no time to use the time-saving devices, you know, as they say. Then we have more degrees, less sense. There was a logician, you know, logicians. Logicians are kind of people, they, anything they see, they will start applying their logic. Like, imagine a logician entering this temple. You know, he will immediately that, why there are three speakers here? You know, logic. What is the logic behind these three speakers? Why these doors are so big? So, that's a logician. So one time, this logician, he went to a remote village of India with his logic, trying to understand the village of India. And he saw a typical scene. The farmer is working in the fields. And you know, if you have seen that they have these bulls going around a pole. You know, a bull going around a pole and grinding the grains. You know, that's what is happening. So, this logician saw that. So, what he saw, there is a pole and the bull is tied to that pole and is going round and round and round. So, now, he had a short circuit. Kya hai? Kya ho? Kya rahe? Ye kya chal rahe? And then the farmer came. So he asked the farmer that what is this happening? And the farmer, you know, was illiterate, just a farmer working in the fields. He said, he's grinding, the bull is grinding grains for me. I'm working in the fields. While I'm working in the field, the bull is going around this pole and grinding fresh, you know, fresh flour. Freshly ground flour. And then which I can make roti and my wife will make and we'll have fresh, that roti. So the logician now started to use his logic. He said, you are working in the field and this bull is going around. How do you know? You can't see from such far distance. How do you know that the bull will do its job by the time you come back? How do you know? एक जगह खड़ा हो गया तो काम नहीं किया, अटेंडेंस लगा दिया खाली, है ना, होता ना, फिर क्या करोगे? So the farmer said, you see the bell which is hanging around the neck. So even if I am miles away, I can hear the bell. है ना, बुल्स को बेल लगाते हैं ना, घंटी बजती रहती, which means I come to know that the bull is moving. This is the problem with you illiterate farmers. Now I'll tell you, what if the bull stands at one place and does like that? So the farmer said, the bull will never do that because he's not a logician like you. If I tie this bell to your neck, you might probably do that, you know. So many times we have more degrees but very less sense, more knowledge, less judgment. As they say that, you know, when the US had their first moon expedition, they manufactured anti-gravity pen and they spent $12 million when the Russians used a pen, pencil. You know, the Russians just used a pencil. So more knowledge, many times less judgment, more experts, but less solutions. We have wider roads, but narrower viewpoints. Yes, everything is becoming bigger and bigger quantitatively, but what about the quality of one's life? What else do we have in paradoxes of life? More medicines, but less wellness. We have multiplied our possessions, reduced our values, conquered outer space, but what about our own inner space? Higher incomes, lower morals, fast food, slow digestion. The food is very fast, but sorry about the digestion. Fancier houses, but then broken families within. Now, of course, in the West, a family concept is no more existing. Like earlier, there was this statistics that in America, 70% of the marriages were turning into divorces within 3 years of marriage. But you know, now the divorce rate has gone down in America. Surprisingly, because nobody marries. You can only divorce, it's all the live-in relationship, so nobody marries. There was a cartoon about a family, American family. And the cartoon had the husband and the wife. And you know, some children were playing in front of them. So the husband is telling to the wife, honey, that's how they address, honey, what a wonderful sight. Just see, your children and my children are playing with our children. So that's the understanding, you know. We have fancier houses but broken families inside. So the modern day mantra is, if you simply have possessions, if you really want to become happy, then you just have more and more things. As if things and possessions will make a human being happy. Shop till you drop. So the mad consumeristic philosophy is, I work in a job which many times I hate to spend the money that I do not have. Using what? Credit cards. To buy stuff that I do not need. Have you heard of Socrates? You know, Socrates once, now Socrates was very famous for living a very simple life, that philosopher. But once he was seen in a big shopping mall. And Socrates was like kind of listing something. He was seeing all the people shopping and he was making a list. So one person who knew him asked that, how come Socrates you are here? And what is this list you are making? So he showed the list. It was a long list. And he said to this person that I am making a list of all these people of buying things here. Of these things, you know, somebody buying a pair of shoes, trousers, all of that. This list is the things which I do not need in my life. And it was a long list. So many times, if we also take a pen and paper, that the things which we have possessed, how many times we really use them? How many of these things which we really need for our survival? So this is one of the points in that consumeristic philosophy. And of course, to impress people whom I anyways do not love. Trying to impress them. What was that? Neighbor's envy, owner's pride. That is my pride. When all the neighbors start envying me. There was a book written on this. That you can ascertain your success depending on how many people envy you. How many people are jealous of you. That's how much successful you are. Very dangerous kind of thing. Then, we have something very strange but very true again. I don't get what I really want. How many times we find ourselves in this particular quandary? Then, I get what I just don't want. I don't want old age. I don't want disease. I don't want Saas Bahu and all that stuff. But the opposite happens. Then, even if I get what I really want, I find it's not permanent. Wo bhi chala jata. And the best part is, and what is permanent, I find it boring. I want something changed in that. So, herein we are understanding that the materialistic equation is, as you see over here, these two images, it says this. We are living in an age where people are used, whereas objects are loved. Recently, one Chinese teenager, he sold off his kidney to buy an iPad. Which means, for him, do kidney na, ek kaam karega na. And why he wanted an iPad? To play some special video games and like that, with graphics and all that. And there have been news, like in Bombay, children have killed their parents because they didn't allow them to use the cell phone for a while. So people are supposed to be loved. When people are used and objects are loved, that's the sorry state of affairs. So, herein, there is something very interesting about this gentleman. Pappu ki dukh bhari kahani. Suna chahenge? So, Pappu ki dukh bhari kahani ye hai. Pareshan thi Pappu ki wife. Non-happening thi jo uski life. पप्पू को न मिलता था आराम ऑफिस में करता काम ही काम पप्पू के बॉस भी थे बड़े कूल प्रमोशन को हर बार जाते थे भूल पर भूलते नहीं थे वो डेडलाइन काम तो करवाते रोज टिल 9 पप्पू भी बनना चाहता था बेस्ट इसलिए तो वो नहीं करता था रेस्ट दिन रात करता वो बॉस की गुलामी अप्रेजल की उम्मीद में देता सलामी दिन गुजरे और गुजरे फिर साल बुरा होता गया पप्पू का हाल पप्पू को अब कुछ याद न रहता गलती से बीवी को बहन जी कहता आखिर एक दिन पप्पू को समझ आया और छोड़ दी उसने अप्रेजल की मोह माया। बॉस से बोला तुम क्यों सताते हो, अप्रेजल के लड्डू से बुद्धू बनाते हो, प्रमोशन तो प्रमोशन दो वरना चला जाऊंगा, अप्रेजल देने पर भी वापस ना आऊंगा। बॉस हंस के बोला नहीं कोई बात, अभी और भी पप्पूज हैं मेरे पास। ये दुनिया पप्पुओं से भरी है, सबको बस आगे बढ़ने की पड़ी है। तुम न करोगे किसी और से कराऊंगा, तुम्हारी तरह एक और पप्पू लाऊंगा। सो मेनी टाइम्स वी फाइंड दैट इन परस्यूट ऑफ सर्चिंग फॉर रियल हैप्पीनेस वन लैंड्स अप इन a situation like that. So when we are talking about looking for happiness, we are looking into things, and many times those things, they result in such bloody wars and so much of dissension. So at this point of time, I would like to show you just a small video. Can we have the lights off for a while? And of course, you are all a very intelligent crowd this time, that your inputs will be very much valuable after this small little video, just a small 5-minute thing. Do we need that light? The source of true happiness. So another beautiful example is given in regards to our senses. Since the word is sense gratification, so we have these gyanendriyas. Who knows? The 5 gyanendriyas. We have the eyes, the nose, the ears, the tongue, and the skin. So there is a verse from Garuda Purana which explains about how there are these 5 animals, and when they go to enjoy just one of their sense, it could be eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, like that, how they get killed. So 5 animals as against 5 of our senses. It's mentioned in this particular verse. Patanga, matanga, kuranga, bhringa, मीना हता पंच भिरेव पंच एकम प्रमाथी सकथम न हन्यते यह सेवते पंच भिरेव पंच। पंच मीन्स 5. सो हियर इन यू हैव द 5 सेंसेस, एज अगेंस्ट द 5 सेंसेस यू हैव द 5 एनिमल्स एनलिस्टेड. सो अगेंस्ट द आईज यू हैव द मॉथ, द ईयर्स यू हैव द डियर, टंग फिश, स्किन एलिफेंट, नोज द बम्बलबी. And this verse essentially explains that how each of these animals, they get killed when they go to enjoy each of their senses. So, herein, the first is the moth. It's in Sanskrit called the patanga. So, this moth is very much enamored by the sense of sight, you know, the dancing flames of fire, very much enamored. So, the moth, you know, circumambulates and at certain point of time enters into that fire and gets burned. Self-immolation, as they say. So, this moth gets killed when it goes to enjoy the sense of sight. It loves so much the dancing flames. The second example is of an elephant, such a huge mammoth-sized animal. This elephant is caught by a 5-foot man, you know, Mahout is called. Knows the weakness of the elephant is sense of touch. So the elephant is very much infatuated by the sense of touch. And this person who wants to catch, the hunter who wants to catch this elephant, he makes an effigy of, say, the she elephant or the he elephant, and digs a pit, covers it with dry grass, and this elephant runs to enjoy the sense of touch and gets trapped in this pit. So, an elephant, matanga, the second animal mentioned in this verse, gets caught or trapped when it goes to enjoy the sense of touch. Sense of hearing. Now, this deer is such a swift animal that when a hunter wants to even shoot an arrow, cannot even have the deer in its range because it's such a swift animal. But the hunter knows the weakness of this deer, music. So what the hunter does? Plays nice flute. And the deer just stands still, wants to enjoy that nice music. And that is the time when the hunter shoots the arrow and kills this deer. Then you have the example of bumblebee in this verse. The bumblebee enjoys the nice fragrance of a lotus flower. And in the evening when the bumblebee sits in the whirl of that lotus flower, the lotus flower closes at night. But the bumblebee, it is mentioned that this bumblebee has the capacity to drill a hole through a tree trunk. It has that capacity. Daru bheda nipunopi. It can do a bheda, a hole through a tree trunk. But what to speak then of the soft petals of a lotus flower? But it doesn't want to, because then it feels that it will lose the nice gratification for the nose. So the bumblebee in the morning when the lotus flower opens is found dead. So this bumblebee gets killed when it goes to enjoy the sense of smell. And the last animal mentioned is the fish, meenaha. The fish gets hooked up when it goes to enjoy the sense of taste or tongue. So, now these five animals are mentioned in this verse, but it is said that each of this animal got killed only when they went to enjoy just one of their senses. The fish got killed only because of the tongue, not because of the eyes or the ears. The elephant got killed only because of the skin, the sense of touch, not because of the other senses. And then, the conclusion of this verse is, what to speak of that species now, which goes to enjoy all the five senses simultaneously? Sakatham nahanyate yasevate pancha bhireva pancha. Who is that species? So we have a human being wanting to enjoy all the five senses. Just like someone goes, you know, in a cinema. So all the five senses are getting gratified, you know, for the eyes, there is nice gratification on the screen, you know, beautiful things happening on the screen. For the ears, there is nice gratification of the music, you know. For the skin, there is nice recliners. In Bombay, there are these 180 degree theaters nowadays. You know, you can just fully lie down. You know, that's the gratification for the skin. And you know, they keep spraying these room fresheners in these theaters, you know, for the nose, because you know, naturally our bodies are not very fragrant. So they have to, you know, for gratification of the nose. And while all of this is going on, that munching is happening. So all the five senses, when one tries to just gratify and think that when I gratify all the five senses, that is true happiness, then the example of the five animals is given. That what happens to these five animals when they go to enjoy just one of their sense, what happened to them? So that is not the goal of the human form of life, to find true happiness just in eating, sleeping, mating and defending and gratifying the five senses. So we are searching for the right thing. What we are searching for, as you all mentioned, we are searching for true happiness, true satisfaction, true peace. But unfortunately, at the wrong place. We are just looking for all of that happiness within this material body, which is potentially more giving us pain than pleasure. So, over here, if we try to titillate our intelligence, now what's happening over here? What is this man doing? Thinking what? Out of the box. So, how are you thinking now out of the box? What are you thinking about this man now? What this man might be thinking? Half glass full. Okay, so here in, it's something very simple. We have the optimist, the pessimist. Huh? So, the optimist looks at? It is half full. The pessimist? You know, there is a third one. So therefore it is said, it is one's attitude, not aptitude, which decides one's altitude. So yes, we all want altitude in our life. But we think that our aptitude will fetch us that altitude. But no, it is our attitude which fetches us that. Go back. So, now from the gross eating, sleeping, mating and defending, we are going into the subtle aspects of our human form of life, wherein we are talking about our attitudes, which the viewpoints, the character, the metaphysical nature of we human beings, which is far more refined than the animal species. And even those human beings who are simply engrossed in the gross eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Can I? Okay. So, we are now coming to the conclusion that pursuing a meaningful life is what should be the goal of this human form of life, which will bring about true happiness. Remember, the topic is searching for true happiness. Searching for real happiness by solving the real problems of life. So, herein, it should be beyond positions and possessions. So I have another very interesting presentation on this particular pursuing for true meaningful life. So imagine, now we are talking about goals, as our friend had mentioned, that we human beings, we have the ability to set goals. Imagine a football game. Now we all know, the football game has got its meaning only when there is a goal post. So now, of course, the football game has, in the literal sense, it's called the goal post. So imagine if you are playing this game and there is no goal post. Kahan leke jaye ball ko? Bas marte raho. So what is the value of that game if the goal post is removed? Similarly, if in our human form of life, we keep on eating, we keep on sleeping, we keep on mating, we keep on defending without a goalpost, then that is something which is ridiculous. It's going to take us nowhere. So, when we are talking about meaningful life, I was talking about this presentation. It's very interesting, which recently I came across. And this is wisdom which we human beings can draw out from. You all like hot chocolate? So, but what wisdom we can draw from this hot chocolate instance? A group of graduates, well established in their careers, were talking at a reunion and decided to go visit their old university professor, now retired. During their visit, the conversation turned to complaints about stress in their work and lives. Offering his guests hot chocolate, the professor went into the kitchen and returned with a large pot of hot chocolate and an assortment of cups, porcelain, glass, crystal, some plain looking, some expensive, some exquisite, telling them to help themselves to the hot chocolate. When they all had a cup of hot chocolate in hand, the professor said, "Notice that all the nice looking expensive cups were taken, leaving behind the plain and the cheap ones." Are you with me? Okay. While it is normal for you to want only the best for yourselves, that is the source of your problems and stress, said the professor. The cup that you are drinking from adds nothing to the quality of the hot chocolate. In most cases, it is just more expensive, and in some cases, even hides what we drink. What all of you really wanted was hot chocolate, not the cup, but you consciously went for the best cups. That's human psyche, spontaneously. And then you began eyeing each other's cups. Now, this is something where it's on the wrong road. When we start eyeing on each other's cups, that whose cup is better than whose. Now consider this, he said. Life is the hot chocolate. Your job, money and position in society are the cups. They are just tools to hold and contain life. The cup you have does not define nor change the quality of life you have. Sometimes by concentrating only on the cup, we fail to enjoy the hot chocolate God has provided us. God makes the hot chocolate. Man chooses the cups. The happiest people don't have the best of everything. They just make the best of everything that they have. So the conclusion of the wisdom from this hot chocolate is, live simply, love generously, care deeply, speak kindly, and enjoy your hot chocolate. Enjoying hot chocolate? So that is the conclusion of our today's talk as well. That searching for real happiness will come about when we solve the real problems of our life. And in solving the real problems of our life, we will achieve the real goal of human form of life, which is to inquire about a permanent solution to the real problems. Not some stopgap temporary relief measures, but permanent solution. Secondly, inquiring about who is the root cause of all causes. Then, who is the source of everything? Who am I? What is my real identity? So these are the questions which we human beings can ask, and not just ask these questions, we can find out the answers, and not just find out the answers, we can apply those answers in our life, and then we'll find the true happiness which is satisfying our true soul. So these questions which we have just put forth is the topic for tomorrow now. Day 2, our Mr. Papu has come. Day 2, does God really exist? Which means, if I am having my real problems, is God responsible for that? Is He the cause of all causes? If He is the cause of all causes, first of all, does He really exist? Especially in India, many times we believe in God, but do we really believe in God? Can we really convince ourselves or someone else the existence of God? So tomorrow, looking into the questions which we took the last slide, we'll begin from this topic, does God really exist? And from a scientific, logical point of view, we'll try to understand the existence of God. Even, you know, we'll take arguments from the atheistic point of view, how they deny the existence of God, and try to understand that what our Vedic scriptures, they try to explain in a very logical, reasonable, scientific way. So that will be our topic for tomorrow, day 2. does God really exist? Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions anyone has? Really burning questions? Wow. So, two reasons. Either you are agreeing with whatever I said, or else sab upar se gaya, aisa to nahi hai na? Okay. So, any announcements?